This is a HeadGum Original.
Baby, when I think about you, I think about punching up a song that is not a Christmas song for once in my life. Let's go!
All right.
It's practically New Year's Eve, let's and I'm ready it. For a fresh start.
Punch up the jam, punch it up while you're feet. Punch up the jam, punch it up.
It's Thursday, 3 a.m., and we're back. We're your relatively new host of Punch Up the Jam. I'm Andrew Gregory.
And I'm Evan Gregory.
And this is kind of embarrassing, I would say, because it's just our third episode, but we're starting out with some corrections. That's right, some corrections from just our first two episodes.
I don't mind it. I don't mind doing a corrections segment because it establishes us as people that love transparency. We like feedback. What do you have from your desk?
Okay, here's what we have from my desk. And you don't know what's on my desk because, as we discussed briefly last week, you're still at home with COVID, Evan. So I'm here in the office by myself. And I'm going to say I'm feeling a little like the Sorcerer's Apprentice. Ooh, because I have the soundboard all to myself this week. Usually you're at the keyboard pulling the strings. But what could go wrong now that Andrew's at the soundboard?
That's fire.
Whoa. You're the man now, dog.
Oh, no.
I mean, all I know is that when you... By the end of this episode, you're going to be reeling, Evan, and what you're probably going to say to me is...
deliver me. Okay. Deliver me from this. Here... I'm trapped recording in my closet at home as I got swept up in the Omicron wave. But you're laughing now, you know, filled with mischief and whimsy as the Sorcerer's Apprentice, but we all know how that story
ended. I'm laughing now about being... the technical director today of our podcast instead of you, but also we just had 2 hours of technical difficulties, so maybe I shouldn't be laughing. All right, first correction. This is from a listener in Scotland, Matthew Gallagher. He messaged us on Instagram, and he, last episode, I called my shot. I said the Paul McCartney song, Mull of Kintyre. I said, I'm calling my shot. When Scotland... Skexits Brexit. When Scotland becomes its own nation, which I think it will eventually, I said, I think Mull of Kintyre will be Scotland's national anthem, and it's going to be weird for them to have a national anthem written by a British person, Paul McCartney. And Matthew wrote in and said, no, we already have a national anthem, and it is the Flower of Scotland. We sing it at our football games. We sing it at our rugby games. I've listened to it a lot. It's a great song. And here it is, The Flower of Scotland. I will say correction to the correction. I was just trying to dot my I's and cross my T's after we have so many corrections this week. I don't think this is actually the official anthem of Scotland yet, but it's like the front runner. There have been polls. There have been votes among athletes. Maybe you just can't have a national anthem until you're officially like totally, totally separate nation. I don't totally understand.
Yeah, just because they sing it at the soccer games doesn't make it a national anthem. I hate to tell you, Matthew.
Yeah, but it's a gorgeous song, and regardless of whether it's the official national anthem of Scotland or not, I'm glad Matthew brought it to our attention. But I think, honestly, I can't uncall my shot. My shot is still called, so it'll only be when Scotland leaves the United Kingdom and the Flower of Scotland is made the official anthem that I'll be wrong. Also, apologies if I said England when I should have said the United Kingdom. I logically understand the difference, but sometimes I screw that up. Second correction. You want to handle this one, Evan?
Second correction. We spent a lot of time last week talking about how Do They Know It's Christmas Time is a crappy song, but at least they had good intentions and raised tons of money, so great success for charity. Yeah.
Something and good came out of it. We may have said that eggs were broken to make an omelet. The eggs, the terrible song, the omelet, the good being done in the country of Ethiopia.
And in the aftermath of the episode coming out, I can't say that this is something even fans really brought to us, but just we're just so into the song, we just kept reading about it, basically, and went back to the 80s doing more reading, and it became manifestly obvious that we were wrong about even the good that the song did. Everyone accepts that this song raised tons of money for charity and is a wonderful charity, but charities sure can bungle things, namely understanding what the cause of the famine was. Was it because of drought? Well, not really. It was because there was a civil war and the dictator was withholding food from people in his own country and going so far as to napalm crops and force people into starvation.
And then what did Bob Geldof do? Bob Geldof, and perhaps this should not be a surprise because Bob Geldof is enough of a moron that he wrote the song, Do They Know It's Christmas Time at All? He took the money and gave it to the Ethiopian dictator who bought a bunch of arms from the Russians, and it made the Civil War a lot worse. So the song was even worse than we thought.
It was an anti-charity song.
We knew the song was bad, but we were like, at least he did something good. But it turns out, like, charities were literally screaming at Bob Geldof, please don't do that with the money, and he did anyway.
We can scientifically conclude that songwriting prowess translates to charity acumen.
Bob Geldof, if you're listening, I hate you.
Whoa.
One other thing, I went to the subreddit for Punch Up the Jam, and I saw a lot of people wondering, are these guys just going to do bad songs instead of good songs too? Demian Miel did a lot of good songs, and we just wanted to assure you, we're going to do good songs. I would say, Feel Like Making Love, good song. When it comes on the radio, I turn the radio up. I understand with the last two Christmas songs we did, if it comes on the radio, you're probably going to change the station.
I have to say it's gratifying that people think that simply having Wonderful Christmas Time is a bad song. That's a controversial position.
Yes, yes.
So I'd say the fans agree, that's gratifying.
Yes. And we're going to do a lot of other great songs this season. We're doing I Won't Back Down by Tom Petty. We're doing Gasolina. That's a good song.
It's a good bad.
Yeah. Yeah, we're doing a lot of great songs this season, and I hope you stick around to hear them. One other correction from the future.
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 We actually recorded this episode first. We reversed the episodes a little bit because we were able to record with Weird Al, which was an unexpected treat, I would say. More than a treat. But
career highlight. I'll go.
Career highlight. Side. Thank you. But later in the episode, if we say it's the first episode, just roll with it and enjoy it. You know what? Honestly, what I would do if I were you is I would go to IMDb, and anytime we make that mistake, put it in the goofs and gaffs section of our podcast on IMDb. That'd be really funny.
Well, let's get into the show. Andrew, how's your week?
There was one bright spot. There were several bright spots, but a real bright spot for me was that I've been declared a neighborhood hero by strangers. I'm receiving plaudits from strangers. There are next door posts about my heroic actions. It's really been great for my ego and my confidence.
That's a major level up from compliments once you start receiving plaudits.
Yes, yes. And the plaudits are, if you don't know, we Evan and I both live in New York City. We live in Brooklyn, New York. And around the start of the pandemic, there's a program started in New York City called Open Streets, where, you know, let's make streets more pedestrian friendly. Cars won't drive down them.
Love it. Yeah, we all want to be outside breathing fresh air.
Yeah, we'll just walk down the middle of the street with our strollers and our bikes. You know, at the beginning of the pandemic, there's even some concerns about, like, is two people on a sidewalk too many? Now it's kind of like an extra park, let's say, for a neighborhood. But one thing that's really annoying about it is that the city's been really lazy about it, in my opinion. It's like, has there been actual improvement to these streets? Any new infrastructure? No. It's just like two janky police barriers, like in the middle of the street, that are always falling over. Cars are running over them. They're like damaging parked cars. And all day long, you hear like a scraping of these police barriers being dragged over asphalt.
It's like the big metal ones, the same ones that would like line the marathon route or something right?
Like you'd see them at a protest. You'd see them to like contain crowds, like, or at like a parade, just like the cheap metal ones with like a grate and the four janky legs. And I had a moment of inspiration, and, you know, flash forward a week, I've gone all up and down the six blocks where I live, right by Fort Greene Park, and I've cut up tennis balls, and you squeeze them so they look like a little Pac-Man.
Sure.
And you can put the tennis ball on the 4 feet of that police barrier, and then it slides silently whenever a car needs to go down the block. And like, as I'm doing this, just like people are like coming up to me. Someone literally said to me, are you the tennis ball angel? I mean, what could be better? Earlier this summer, Evan, I went to the beach with your son.
And this is so wholesome.
I buried him in the sand. He's a five-year-old child. And he was in the sand a weirdly long amount of time for a five-year-old. He's a very patient kid. He was in under there like 20, 30 minutes.
Okay.
And finally I asked him, I said, Ollie, how long are you going to stay under there? And Ollie said, until a stranger notices me and says, wow. And I just thought, like, this is the most wholesome, like, distillation of, like, what the human heart
of
really
human
wants.
Psychology.
And it's
how
like,
how long
not,
are you going to do this horrible
like,
thing?
He's not embarrassed. He's just real. He's like, I want a stranger to notice me and say wow. And, like, as I was receiving these plaudits, as I'm walking up and down Willoughby Ave, putting these tennis balls on barriers, I was just like, this is what has happened to me. A stranger is noticing me and saying wow.
Oh, it's so elemental.
So that was my week. How was your week, Evan?
Well, thank you so much for asking, Andrew. It wasn't my greatest week. After about 20 months of avoiding the virus, got swept up in this latest wave of COVID with the Omicron variant. Tested positive right before Christmas. Ugh. With my wife and one of my kids. So we just spent the whole holiday not seeing anybody, not going out, trapped inside our four walls, rolling around on the couch. It was cuddly. It was cozy. But I'm still feeling a little down about it. I'm still quarantining, recording this in my closet.
As discussed, yes.
But I am thankful. I am grateful that everybody in the family has all their shots and the adults are boosted. So it didn't hit us that bad. Like, we felt it a little bit, moderate symptoms, but we're not deeply, deeply sick.
Was it a drag to not see you for Christmas? Yes. But silver lining, I hope you had a really nice, cozy Christmas with your immediate family. We've been doing like big extended family Christmases the last couple of years. Very cozy with a lot of PJs and a lot of Mario Party. The second silver lining, the other reason your week is looking up, Evan, is because this week we're talking about Bad Company.
Yes, okay. Feel
we're
like
talking
making
about
love.
Company. We're talking about Feel Like Making Love, you know, probably the greatest song of all time. You know, you love it when you're over at your in-law's house and it just comes on the radio while you're looking in, while you're looking into your husband or wife's or lover's eyes. And I'm going to talk a little bit of a background of the song.
Okay.
I think for the listeners out there, I think this is kind of how Evan and I are going to divvy it up. Both of us are musicians, you know, and I can tell a four chord from a one chord. Yeah, I can tell a minor chord from a major chord.
Okay. Just
but I'm going to brag on Evan.
This deep shop talk.
I'm going to brag on Evan. This is a man sitting next to me, my brother Evan, who has a degree in music theory. So wow. I'm a little intimidated still. A lot of the music stuff he's going to be in charge of.
I can't believe you outed me like that. I have a secret, which is that, we've just been talking this whole time, but my dirty secret is that I hooked a keyboard up to this podcast rig so I can just do this.
Yeah.
And play notes.
That's good.
I don't know if I wanted to talk about notes or whatever.
Yeah, we didn't mention that yet, but there'll be at least a 20-minute music theory lecture every episode now. That's a new feature.
Is that on me? I got to do that.
So if Evan's doing all the heavy lifting with making a theme song, with talking about the music and the engineering behind a song, I got to be in charge of browsing Wikipedia articles and making a bulleted list to talk about. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the lore of Bad Company. And I think really the jumping off point for me that kind of blew my mind is, like, when you think Bad Company, Evan, like, what do you think? What pops in your mind when you think about the band Bad Company?
I think about Great Uncle Tom is the first thing I... Well, if I think about the band...
If you think about the band Bad Company...
Oh, boy.
And I mean,
one major problem we're going to have in recording this podcast is the fact that we're brothers has created this, like, long, long shared history between these two podcasts, namely A Whole Life, existing the same upbringing and now the same profession, and so everything's going to be a freaking in-joke, but I hope this is worth it, because what Bad Company makes me think of is Morgan King.
Yes.
Is that what you were going to say?
No, not at all. But this is true. One of me and Evan's very close friends was strangely obsessed with the band Bad Company in the mid-90s. And I think in the entire town of Radford, Virginia, which is a very small town, there was an uptick in the popularity of Bad Company just through the gravitas of Morgan's love and Morgan's high opinion of Bad Company. But I think really, I think that the only thing you can say about the band Bad Company is that your friend Morgan liked them. I think speaks to the point I want to make about Bad Company. So I'm glad you made this extraneous point, which is that, like, what does anyone know about Bad Company? Like, if you ask someone about, like, the Beatles or Led Zeppelin, there's all these stories, you know, about the personalities, you know, who's in the band. Bad Company is just, like, a blank. It's like a void. It's like, I think they made songs,
just hearing you saying their name so many times is making me basically have an opinion, which is that I remember that their most famous song, Feel Like Making Love, but one of their other major hits is just called Bad Company. And I think that is so awesome that they were just like, we just want to have a song that is just our same name.
They're like, we need a theme song, and it's going to be called Bad Company.
Yeah, like the Rolling Stones at least named themselves after a famous Dylan song. Like, that song rules, and we'll just grab that name, Rolling Stone, from the famous idiom. And then, meanwhile, these guys were like, oh, yeah, we're Bad Company, and don't you forget it. How about, wait, let's turn that into a ditty. I'm Bad Company.
That's it. We got it.
That's it. We got it. Imagine if the Beatles' first single was just like, we're the Beatles, yeah, yeah, yeah. Although it strikes me that basically is the Monkees' first hit.
Right, but that's, like, when you think about the Monkees, it's like a band put together, like a fake band, basically, put together. And that's, like, how Bad Company almost feels. But what blew my mind is that, like, in their own era, they were regarded to be like this super band, like four people at the top of their game coming from different bands to like join together like the Power Rangers or like Voltron to create a super band. And now if you were to like talk about Bad Company, most people wouldn't be able to name one member of Bad Company, much less be like, oh, yes, the guitarist from Mott the Hoople. Like, what? Mott the Hoople?
Is this true?
This is true.
I mean, I do know the name of the singer of Bad Company. This dude's name is Paul Rogers.
We only know that because Morgan.
I guess you're right.
I will admit, my first concert ever, Paul Rogers and Lynyrd Skynyrd.
That was your first live concert experience?
It was my first concert by myself with a friend.
If you're buying tickets to that, it says Lynyrd Skynyrd, right? It doesn't say Paul Rogers.
It was a triple bill. Lynyrd Skynyrd, Paul Rogers, Kenny Wayne Shepherd. Just like an amazing Southwest Virginia lineup. And we were driven an hour and a half to like Tennessee to see it by Morgan King's mom. Morgan, I hope you're listening.
I hope Morgan is listening to this.
So that's why we even know Paul Rogers is in Bad Company. But it's like it's like a black box of hard rock. But like meanwhile, contemporarily, like Freddie Mercury was crazy for Paul Rogers singing. Paul Rogers was like for five, 10 years, Paul Rogers replaced Freddie Mercury in Queen. Replaced isn't the right word. But there was a band called Queen X Paul Rogers for like of the 90s and the 2000s when they were like, there's only one man that can replace Freddie. Paul Rogers. Like, what? Paul Rogers?
This is crazy to me.
The guy who formed a super band with the bassist from King Crimson and the guitarist from Mott the Hoople? Those are real bands.
But how amazing to be imported into Queen and to have Freddie Mercury compliment your vocals, you know, that's like being, you know, a pretty good actor and having Tom Hanks say, like, right, this guy's my idol, sub him in for me anytime you need a sub Tom Hanks.
Exactly. I mean, John Cougar Mellencamp has called Paul Rogers the best rock singer ever, which really, I mean, that calls into question a lot of things.
That counteracts what Freddie Mercury said.
Yeah. Yeah,
that actually takes Paul Rogers down.
85th percentile rock singer.
Yeah, we're sort of back where we started.
Which is also where I feel like Bad Company is.
There was a compliment and then an insult. It was like a complisult.
So you got this super band together. You know, they're brewing. Paul Rogers' original band, Free, has fallen apart because of drug problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did a song probably, I think, better than any Bad Company song ever. All right now.
Baby, yeah.
It's all right now.
Sure, that song freaking
great.
Rocks.
Great. Paul Rogers hit. I mean, he's singing that at like age 18, age 19, just crushing it. Maybe he is the best rock singer of all time.
Wow. Okay.
So he's on tour with Free. He's in California. He's at a camp hanging out. And he pins the perfect lyrics to this perfect song. Be Like Making Love. Flash forward 6 years. He's sitting around with Mick Ralphs, former guitar player of Mott the Hoople. And Mick Ralphs is like, man, we need a new song. Like, what do you got in your back pocket? Like, what's the best thing? What's the best thing you haven't put out there yet? And this is what he pulls out. A little song called Feels Like Making Love.
So you're telling me that Paul Rodgers is sitting on these lyrics for 6 years before they actually put this song together.
And when paired with Mick Ralph's perfect guitar riff, it becomes just the perfect rock song.
This massive hit.
Yeah, it comes out in 1975. And honestly, one of the weirdest, craziest things about this to me is as I was doing research for this song, you know, this is Bad Company's biggest hit. This was on the year-end chart, 1975. 1974, 1 year previously, there's another top 10 hit called Feels Like Making Love. Totally different song. Top 10 hit. Like, if this song was a hit in 1975, and you're living in 1975, do you just think, like, is this going to happen every year?
I think I know the other song. Are you talking about Roberta Flack?
Yes. Yes.
Strolling
later.
In the park.
Yeah, exactly.
Watching what feels like making love.
Yeah, it's a song
feel
about
like,
how
oh, yeah,
going
I
to the park
like
makes you horny.
Love,
yeah,
you?
D'Angelo covered it on Voodoo.
Yes, yes, okay.
Yeah, it's a great song.
Oh,
but this
like major like bedroom R&B. It's extremely sultry. You listen to it and your clothes instantly turn into velour and you're wrapped in satin.
It's laid back. It's in the pocket. It's relaxed, but a little sexy. A lot sexy.
Oh, extreme sexy. Yeah. I mean, that's up there with, you know, Let's Get It On with like extremely on the nose signals for we're going to go sex right now.
Yeah. But I'd love to imagine a world where like the Roberta Flack song comes out in 74, the Bad Company song comes out in 75, and then someone in the music industry is like, guys, let's keep this rolling. On Atlantic Records, we put out a Feels Like Making Love every year. And there's just like a 76, 77, 78. Just like they're still rolling out. It'd be amazing. I have one miniature challenge for you. Which I was looking at the year-end chart. Like I said, this charted year-end chart for Bad Company, their biggest hit of all time.
We're talking about the Billboard.
Billboard Hot 100. They put out a year-end chart. So I think this peaked somewhere around 10, but at the year-end chart at 68. I challenge you. It's 1975. Okay. To name one artist who had a top five hit. One artist with a top five hit in the year of our Lord, 1975 AD.
This is a quiz, 1975?
Yes, one artist.
Who had a hit in the...
I will Venmo you $5 if you can name a single artist.
The stakes are high. This could get me...
I'm going to Venmo you $5 right now.
You give me 1.5 slices of pizza.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's think out loud here. This is post Beatles. We're out of the British invasion here, but we're pre disco. I was gonna you know guess something along the lines of like the Bee Gees or something, but we're still a couple of years before they moved from just like a Hot 100 band to a top five band. Who was really cranking it out?
Evan, you can run, but you can't hide.
Oh,
you got
no.
Top five. You get one guess.
Oh, Lord. Preserve me from these quizzes. Is this going to happen every episode of this show?
I mean, I wasn't planning on it, but honestly, it depends on if you get this one right. You know, I only have so many $5 to go around.
My guess is David Bowie.
That is not in the top five, Evan. This top five just blew my mind. It's why I wanted to ask you. Frankie Valli.
Oh.
I mean, who would have ever thought Frankie Valli is a top five hit in 1975?
Is that when Oh What a Night came out?
I don't even know. So you got Frankie Valli, Freddie Fender.
Who is that?
Exactly. The only one that I think is gettable on this list, the only one that I thought maybe Evan would say this, Elton John.
Ugh, okay.
The country singer, Glenn Campbell, Like a Rhinestone Cowboy.
What? Glenn Campbell had a top five hit?
Yes, and the number one hit in 1975, now they're nothing but a punchline about yacht rock, Captain and Tennille.
What?
Yeah, I know!
Come on, every single one of these got a really bad, confused face from me, majorly squinched eyebrows here that don't read on the microphone. I should have thought about the Rocket Man though.
Maybe we'll
think
have
about the Rocket Man.
Maybe we'll have to start making those weird YouTube videos that are just YouTube videos of podcasts. I don't get it, but I mean, we'll have to start doing it just for the top five bit that now is established part of this podcast.
I'd like to do another hour or so on the history of the band, mostly because it gives me almost a physical pleasure to hear the stupid word hoople.
Mott the Hoople.
Come out of your mouth so many times.
And, I mean, they were a big band in the early 70s, and they were very, I mean, I just watched the Bee Gees documentary, like, the keyboard player who was, like, instrumental to the Bee Gees' new sound when they went disco, like, he was a Mott the Hoople guy.
I know you've just spent, you know, a couple hours in Wikipedia. Can you tell me what is a hoople?
No, I cannot tell you what
it is. Is it like another word for a mountain lion?
I don't know what a hoople is. And I'm honestly begging you not to make me talk about Bad Company anymore, because frankly, their lineup gets pretty confusing with lead singers when Paul Rogers leaves to make a different supergroup called The Firm in the 80s. I mean, like, imagine getting to make bands in a day and age when SEO didn't matter. And you could just be like, yeah, name my band, it's The Firm.
The name of my band is Noun. Let's start.
Yeah, let's listen to the song.
Let's start playback on this song. I want to hear some actual notes on this podcast about music. Okay, let's see what I got here.
Oh, man. That is what a hoople is, my friend.
Yeah, man. Oh, I had to stop it because, I don't know, as much smack as I want to talk about, like, the supergroup lineup and stuff, you don't have to listen to another second before you know you have a hit.
That's so beautiful.
The guitar riff,
Mick Ralph,
is basically perfect. It's just awesome. It's just so beautiful. If that comes on 105 The Bear while I'm cruising up Route 11 to hit the Sonic, I freaking crank it, man.
Volume dial's going all the way to the right. And another thing I'll say is, the crazy thing about this song is we know where this song's going. Maybe you don't. But it's going to end up being a song that VH1 called one of the top 100 hard rock songs of all time. When you hear those clarion clear acoustic guitar notes cascading mm-hmm. down the neck mm-hmm. of Mick Ralph mm-hmm. of Mott the Hoople's guitar.
Yeah, what a
head fake. You're not thinking like, wow, this is going to be sandwiched between Guns N' Roses and Poison on the VH1 Top 100 Hard Rock Song list.
Great point. Yeah, let's get beyond these dulcet tones and see where exactly it starts rocking.
Baby, when I think about you, I think about love.
Can you pause it for a second?
Yeah.
This is like not as like a songwriting note, but from a production standpoint, I'm just basking in the sound of the snare drum. The snare drum is like so, it's kind of like to me it's so dry. It's like so hollow and dead in a way that is like so 70s cool. Like very like post Levon Helm, the drummer of the band. Like the band.
Yeah.
Like just so dry. I love that snare drum sound. It's really hip, I think. And you have that dry, like non-reverb snare against this super reverb guitar and like the lush.
Yeah, I have to
lush
agree.
Harmonies.
And I have to agree. It's, you know, snare drum's not something I usually bask in. Usually.
It only lasts an eighth note after all.
Sure. It's a fraction of a second that you can actually hear the sound. Usually I'm basking in, you know, say like a dulcimer. Or a euphonium.
Oh, yeah.
But this snare drum is worth basking. I'll give you
what's
that.
What's a euphonium?
Like a marching baritone.
Oh.
Brass instrument.
Yeah.
You know, like...
like you do.
You know, tiny tuba. I don't know. From the music side, I think one thing that I'm loving is that, like, this is such a vibe. I'm chilling. It's this like very highly associated with road trips for me because it would be like coming on a radio is where I would hear this song. But musically speaking, we have only yet heard two chords, the simplest acoustic guitar chords of D and G.
And it's still not a hard rock song.
They have gone back and forth about 16 times on these two chords and have not gone further than that. Let's see.
I mean, just imagine though. I can just imagine, you know, Mick Ralph saying, "What do you got, Paul? What do you got in your back pocket?" And you just pull. He pulls out the notebook and he says, "I've been saving this one for 6 years, man. Darling, when I think about you.
I think about love.
And Mick is just like,
that's gold. Oh, baby.
If I was ever a hoople. But the one other thing I'll say is that it's kind of weird. The harmonies are so beautiful when they get to the loves.
Yes.
But it's kind of weird that it's one guy saying, when I think about you, I think about love. And then like, his friends are there singing harmony with him. Just kind of a weird vibe.
Well, I mean, that's just something we accept in rock music, right? But I see what you're saying there, like, especially in this song, which is like, begins with a bit of intimacy.
It's about a private intimacy.
I don't know. There is definitely something like, oh, there were four guys standing in the other room that all of a sudden you see their heads poke out of a doorway going, I think about love. Hi, Denise. Love.
You want to make love with Paul Rogers, but you don't want to make love with the barbershop group that Paul Rogers is in.
Paul, you invited Hoople again? Can we have some privacy? I've been talking to you about this.
Let's see if it is going to become a hard rock song.
Okay.
Let's find out.
Feel it dying on the way. Feel like making love. Feel like making love.
John, 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 John.
Feel like making love.
John, 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 John. Here's the money. The money chord's coming up. Oh, wow. That's, I mean, when Paul Rogers pulled out the notebook, Mick Ralphs didn't say anything. He didn't say, we've got a hit. He just picked up his guitar and just went, cha-chon, chon, cha-chon, chon, cha-chon, chon. And that's when you got the hit, is when the Mick Ralphs hit riff hits.
Oh, it's so muscular. It's so powerful.
What are the, at the end of the chorus, Evan, on the feel like making love to you? Where are they headed there on the
feel like making love? And then the bass all they all play go up.
What chords are they going through there? Is that like is that the major six?
Yeah, well they're in the key of D here. Do 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 feel like make down to a C. That's a major seven. This.
A major seven.
Four inversion, and then on this blues note, up to the F.
But it's like, okay, you think you've heard every chord in the song, and then at the end of Making Love, I've got a special little move for you, and it's called the major seven. That's what we like to call symbolism.
They stuck in the special move.
The counterclockwise twist.
You know, one thing I can promise is that on this podcast, you're going to get a lot of music theory as sexual euphemism.
Now, crossing over to the lore just for a second, I found out there's a very big cover of this in the 1990s that hit in the UK, and it was like an R&B cover of this. I listened to it. It's great. I'd never heard it. It's fascinating.
An R&B cover of this song. Not an R&B cover of the R&B song that came out the previous year.
You almost have to wonder, did she like call her producer and say like, hey, I want to cover Feels Like Making Love, send over the sheet music. He goes into the vault of the sheet music, gets the 1975 version instead of the 1974 version, sends it to her. Next thing you know, she recorded the wrong one. But what I'm trying to say is it's an R&B 90s vibe, so like drum machine, like all these synths, and then it hits the chorus, and that same freaking guitar riff comes in. Just like the producer, the artist, the label is just like, well, you gotta have the guitar riff. Like I was kind of getting excited, like, oh, what are they gonna do the riff? Are they gonna do the riff on like an organ or something? And it's just like, no, in the middle of this 90s R&B hit, it's just like, ja-jong, 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 ja-jong.
Like totally out of character for that song, but so crucial to the songwriting that they could not get.
They could not take it out.
The rock guitar out, even in a place totally foreign to rock guitars.
Yeah, and like, honestly, and this speaks real. I mean, now this is just a Mick Ralphs fan club meeting, basically. But the guitar solo, also note for note the same. Note for note. It's a great guitar solo. We'll get there.
Baby, if I think about you,
think about love.
They just changed the tense. That's all they did.
Darling, if I live without you,
I'm still thinking about you.
I live without love.
Okay, that line. That line slaps.
If I live without you,
I live without love. That's a heartbreaker. I think that's a really good line.
I mean, well, you've really flipped it around. First of all, he's thinking about them, and therefore he thinks about love. But it's a huge new statement to say. But also, if I don't have you, all love subtracted from my life.
That's deep, man.
It's gone.
You are my only source of love. I love this song. We've been ragging on it a little bit. I'm a little embarrassed. My first concert ever was Lynyrd Skynyrd, Paul Rodgers. But that line hits with me. When I live without you, I live without love. Good line.
If I live without Lynyrd Skynyrd, I live without testosterone. I don't think you need to be embarrassed that was your first concert. How old were you?
Probably 14, 15. The funniest thing about that concert that I still remember is we came out and Anne, Morgan's mom, just cracking up in the parking lot. She's later my first boss. She was the head librarian in Radford, Virginia. Very cool lady. And she was like, I was sitting out here with like the other Lynyrd Skynyrd moms that like, you know, brought their kids but didn't want to buy a ticket. And this other Lynyrd Skynyrd mom was like giving Anne this whole sob story about like, my son is in a wheelchair and this is Lynyrd Skynyrd's favorite band and he just wanted to come here to like see them play and they'd like driven hours to get there. And she was like, but he has this one favorite song that like he just hopes that Lynyrd Skynyrd plays. And Anne was like, what's the song? And she was like, it's called Free Bird. And Anne was just like, I think they're going to play that one. It really stuck with me.
There's three things that are guaranteed in life. Death, the creator economy, and that Skynyrd will play Free Bird at their own shows.
Okay, let's see how Paul Rodgers gets to the next chorus. We live without love. It's something about $1 million?
Let's see.
The sun and moon, and they were shining. I would give you both night and day, love satisfying. You like making
I'm gonna pause it again.
When he gets into that like chorus voice he has instead of like the chilled out like verse voice he has,
yeah,
you're kind of like, is this the forerunner to Scott Stapp of Creed? Feel like making love.
Well, that's something you could say about this whole song, that you know, for it to be on the top 100 hard rock songs of all time, you're like, okay, by today's standard, this is not that hard, but if you think about being in the mid-70s, like most hard rock does not yet exist. This is only a forerunner. It's like showing a roadmap of what happens when you turn your guitar amp up in certain ways.
Yeah, yes, and when you take Scott Led Zeppelin sounds and just try to write a pop song.
right.
Evan?
Yeah.
I'll Venmo you $5 if you can tell me one of the artists that Queen collaborated with before they locked in with Paul Rodgers from 2000 to 2008.
Oh, Lord. What embarrassment for
Queen
me
Plus.
To be quizzed
that was on that's the form. It's Queen Plus. Who was another plus in
so
the
you're 1990s? Saying this is that's just something they did was Evan, just Queen Evan, Plus fill in the blank.
You took too long and you did not get Queen Plus Pavarotti. Queen Plus Wyclef Jean and somehow, I shit you not, Queen plus Nelson Mandela.
What?
Imagine! imagine.
That's an ensemble that
performs. That's an ensemble. Imagine that you go from Pavarotti to Wyclef Jean to Nelson Mandela. You're like, okay, those are pretty good one-offs. It was a good run, maybe a nice concert. But you know who we've got to get? Paul Rodgers.
I don't know. Nelson Mandela, I feel like maybe it was him going the other way. Like Nelson Mandela had achieved the dissolution of apartheid, and it's basically like a living saint at that time, and everyone knew it. He could kind of do whatever he wanted. Maybe he called Queen and was like, guys, I'm kind of like riding a really good publicity wave right now. A lot of goodwill. My Q rating is through the roof. Would it be okay with you guys if we just did a super group?
And they said yes. I love it. I'd probably know all this if I watched that rugby movie with Matt Damon and Morgan Freeman. It's probably covered. This is probably the B plot.
Yeah, that Morgan Freeman busts through the door going, no one says no to Nelson Mandela.
That's probably where they had their Queen plus Nelson Mandela concert, is at halftime of the rugby match. Is it a rugby game, rugby match on the rugby pitch? Let's listen to the guitar solo.
Yes, rugby battle. okay, here upcoming is a guitar solo. Here we go.
I mean, note for note in the Pauline Henry version, and it's just beautiful. Mm. For me, it's kind of like a Allman Brothers band thing with the guitars and.
Very Allman Brothers. Harmonies, it's Southern rock. There's harmony in the guitar. You could easily take that over to R&B. It's so tuneful.
From here on out, it's all chorus. They're like, how are they going to do it? How can they sustain this energy for another 45? Oh, that's how you do it!
I see your game. Oh. We got a minute and a half left. We can just keep blasting the chorus.
Unleash the hoopla!
Going, it don't feel wrong. It don't feel wrong to keep going.
You thought two choruses was enough, but it ain't for the hoopals. Maybe John Cougar Mellencamp was right. I mean, they who knows how long they kept going? They end with a fade because they did another couple choruses.
You got to assume that the band is feeling so good that at that point they're playing for another 10 minutes. Like the jam feels really good.
Somewhere Mick Ralphs is still playing that.
They could still be playing.
I mean,
the engineer cut it off, sent it to mastering. It charted on the Billboard Hot 100. The band is still playing while all that transpired.
I'll just say, like, you know, coming into this, having seen Paul Rodgers live at age 14, I really thought, like, in Abingdon, Virginia, I really thought it's a vehicle for Paul Rodgers, Bad Company, right? And the other guys, who cares? But, I mean, listening to this song and learning the lore of them as a supergroup formed from King Crimson, Free and Mott the Hoople, you just gotta see it. I see it now. They are a supergroup. The dead snare, the just raging Mick Ralphs guitar solo, and also like in that long solo over the last chorus. Like, I feel like usually a guitar solo, you find out either a guy's a melodic guy or he's a fuzz guy. And Mick Ralphs distinguished himself as a guy who can play melodic licks and fuzz in the last 2 minutes of that song.
What a compliment.
Yeah.
Wow. I guess for me, the metric is when you come out of that song, do you feel like making love?
Oh.
At that point, having listened to it, is the song an enticement to you, a listener? Is it telling you how you ought to feel? Is it directional?
I will say that that song does not make me feel like making love, personally. Does it make you feel like making love, Evan?
It made teenage me feel like making love. Yeah, it made me feel hot under the collar as like somebody who just got his driver's license and would turn on the classic rock station to drive to, I don't know, school and back or something extremely mundane, and you're looking for anything to change the emotional tenor of your teenage life. Yeah, this would get me hot and bothered for sure. Did I have a girlfriend? No.
Did you feel like making love? Sure.
Sure. Who doesn't on occasion?
Now for you, Evan, you know, your question is, does this song pass muster as being a song that makes you feel like making love?
I don't even know if that's the right question to ask. I'm just assuming that because the title is
It's the Right like Question to Ask. But I think a question I have is, you know, you've listened to the song from beginning to end, from the dulcet notes of Mick Ralph's, of Mott the Hoople, acoustic guitar at the beginning to his raging solo at the end. Does this pass muster as a hard rock song?
Okay.
Does this belong on VH1's list of the greatest 100 hard rock songs of all time? And also, frankly, why is this kind of crossover with your question? Why are so many hard rock songs so horny? Guns N' Roses, Poison, it's just a lot of horny songs. Yeah, but it's kind of weird to go back and listen to them because like they're using slang from the 70s and 80s that frankly now is kind of like G-rated. Imagine if Megan Thee Stallion was out there rapping about how she wanted to make love. Wouldn't really play in 2021.
I think a lot of the like hair band hard rock of the late 70s and 80s that is all about you know, being really sexy, and also the accompanying music videos where you're like writhing on the hood of the car and all that stuff. it feels a little try hard to me, just like these male singers yelling at women like, "Let's go make love."
Yeah, and unfortunately, the concept of being a try hard was still, you know, 25, 30 years away. They couldn't have a manager or a friend to pull them aside and say like, "Hey, man, it's a little try hard when you're on the hood of the car. You just like do something a little low key." So like if you're trying to make this song sexier, Evan, do you make it more hard rock to like lean into the Guns N' Roses-ness of it? Or do you like, I mean, you can't go fully R&B because Pauline Henry tried and she couldn't. The riff had to stay.
There was gravity to that guitar solo. It sucked her back in.
And I guess if you manage to go past the guitar riff and the guitar solo, well, where do you end up? With not the 1975 version of Feels Like Making Love, but the 1974 version of Feels Like Making Love. You don't want to do that. What's the 1976 version of Feels Like Making Love? The 1976 version of Feels Like Making Love.
Every year there's a draft of Feel Like Making Love.
Every year.
Every year we publish one single draft, and it gets better, and it mutates into another Michael Keaton version of Multiplicity Michael Keaton. Yeah.
In the 70s, it should have been like a showdown, like a battle royale between the major labels. You know, Atlantic is there. You know, Warner is there. They each have a Feels Like Making Love. They shoot it out, and it's just like, all right, you guys get the 1975 or the 1976 Feels Like Making Love.
Yeah, I think it could just be a more direct appeal. You know, like there's something extremely rocking and gratifying about this song if you just accept it for what it is. But if you like listen a little too hard, to have this guy down on one knee in front of a woman, when I think about you, I think about love. It's not even clear that they have a relationship. Yeah. And he's shouting at her, I feel like making love.
And I think one of the things that makes the song, when you step back from it, a little weird and a little tryhard and maybe a little too horny and makes you wonder, does this guy even know this girl, is how repetitive the chorus is, the melody in the chorus is. Feel like making love. just that over and over again, like kind of screaming it. Like, I feel like if you want to make the sentiment a little bit more interesting, you need to be a little bit more mellifluous, let's say, with your melody.
Yes. I feel horny is what's being stated here. Let's go act upon it.
I feel horny, and I hope you do too.
And I hope you do too. What an entreaty.
Huh.
It works because the guitars shred so hard, but if you subtract the guitars.
Oh, man. If you just dropped Mick Ralphs out of the mix, I think that, I mean, dare I say it, this song might drop out of VH1's top 100 hard rock songs of all time.
That's controversial. That's a controversial statement, saying that if you take the guitar out of the song, it might not be a hard rock song anymore. I'm going to have to stew on that one for a little bit. Well, I think it's time for us to conclude talking the talk, and we got to start walking the walk, and by which I mean punching the punch. And we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have a punched up version of Feel Like Making Love by Bad Company. Magic Spoon is in my house, and I'm enjoying it immensely. But it's causing some strife because I can't rip it out of my wife's hands. She's plowing through this fruity flavor like it's her job.
I will say I'm having a similar problem. My in-laws are very, very health-centered. They're very, very healthy eaters. They were visiting me last night. And when they left, I noticed that suspiciously a box was gone. Not like a box that they ate while they were visiting me. A box that they snuck out of the house.
They pilfered.
So, Magic Spoon, if you're listening to this, please send us more boxes. Magic Spoon is the healthy cereal for adults. It's got 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving, and only 140 calories a serving.
It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and low-carb. But they didn't put in the talking points here that it's extra delicious. Hello.
But it's not strife-free.
Yeah, your marital conflict is a bonus. I recommend the variety pack. The 4 flavors that come in the variety pack are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter.
And, you know, you just mix them and match them and get wacky. For me so far, the classic combo, cocoa and peanut butter. Tastes like a Reese's peanut butter cup. Love it. It's like Halloween for Christmas. So go to magicspoon.com/jam and grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code JAM at checkout to save $5 off your order. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
Get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/jam and use the code JAM to save $5. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
We are back. It has been about 1 week since we left you. I've been working tirelessly on punching up Feel Like Making Love. I'm so excited to play it for you, Evan. But first, I want to talk a little bit. I mean, this is just our first week of hosting this podcast, but There's already some aspersions and allegations being bantered about between the two of us off mic. I feel like I've got a got to get them off my chest.
What is this that you're about to bring into the public eye?
Well, I just got to get it off my chest. There was a little bit of chatter from you after we shut down the podcast last week, saying that you deserved $5 for guessing David Bowie because David Bowie was in the top 10. He had a top 10 hit. In 1975. But I feel like the challenge was very clear. It had to be a top five. And thus, you did not deserve the $5.
Okay. If Bowie was in the top 10 that year, can I get 250?
That, I mean, it's just not the way I laid out the rules. That would have been a great way to lay out the rules. Like, top five, you get $5. Top 10, you get 250. Top 25, you get, 25 cents.
I hate this. I hate this
but,
so much.
Yeah, I had to get that off my chest. But to the punch. I mean, we learned so much about Bad Company this week. And one of the things I think I just had not wrapped my head around is just what a giant in their time they were. I mean, this is a true super group, and I feel like our understanding of that has kind of faded as time has passed. You look back at Bad Company, like, oh, who was in that band?
You're right. Yeah, I just accept that they're just another face in the classic rock crowd. Yeah.
In 1975, you're like, what? They got a guy from King Crimson, two guys from Free, and a freaking hoopoe. What? So I feel like this song has kind of become unmoored from that amazing history. And I wanted to put together a version of that song for the common man, a version of this song for just like the standard rocker who's, you know, maybe he's been practicing in his garage with his friends. He's maybe 16 or 17 years old, and he's ready to play.
The standard rocker is a 16 or 17-year-old boy.
Yeah, and he's ready to play his first rock concert. He and his friends are going to carry their amps out of their stepdad's garage and onto their stepdad's driveway. Maybe play some summer evening to all the kids in the neighborhood a song about exactly what it's like to make love. And to feel like you're making love. So without further ado, here is my punch up to Feel Like Making Love.
Okay. I'm going to hit you with a running commentary here.
Baby, when I think about you, I think about heaven sex. Because, darling, having sex is definitely the best.
It's
if
true.
I had not done sex already, or at least done some heavy foreplay, could I come up with a temptation as tempting as the one where I say I'm not a
yeah, this sounds crispy.
I'm not a virgin.
Ah, my friend, my
sex
teenage
is
friend.
Really fun.
Thou dost protest too much.
It's something I have done. I am not a virgin. Baby,
Who could feel like making love more than a virgin?
I live without love.
That line's perfect, so I just left it the same.
That line was perfect. You cannot punch up that line.
What happened?
You made the right choice.
I spent 6 weeks far away from home when I went to summer camp up in Quebec. I met this girl.
This is very specific. This sounds
it's
based on real life.
To believe, but I hadn't done it till Claudette rocked my world. I'm not a I've had some sex. At sex, I'm the best.
Yes. Not only are you playing the riff,
your
but you're just chum chummy chum scatting the guitar riff. Thank you for that.
Classic virgin move. May I feel your breast? If not, I spoke in jest. It's just a kid, just a joke. We could still be friends. Again, we've already established that this guitar solo is perfect.
I was just joking and I took it back.
Hey, this guitar solo cannot be punched up.
You've made some very judicious choices on leaving in the perfect guitar bits. How could you possibly do better than this?
I'm not a virgin. I wanna touch your bones. Sex positions I know some. And most I have done.
Okay, just very frankly speaking, I wasn't expecting to enjoy this, and I think this was a massive success. You took what is clearly a virgin anthem, I feel like making love, and let me tell you about it, and you've spelled it out more clearly. As now, I can absolutely see your vision of playing this outside the garage on the driveway to the neighborhood and your very first garage band concert. But I love, you also hit on, I think, a really new idea that is a massive punch up for nearly any song, but certainly this one, which is loving a guitar riff so hard that as you play it, you're also just singing it. Chum, 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 chum.
And you know you weren't supposed to. The first chorus, you could stop yourself. But by the time that last chorus comes along, just the power of the hoople, Mick Ralphs, has overcome you, and you're singing along to one of the greatest riffs in history.
I petition every rock band to do this. When we're making today's supergroup, today's equivalent of Bad Company, by cherry-picking the best and hottest members from Imagine Dragons and Nickelback, and you put them into one killer ensemble, I demand that they sing all of their guitar solos along with themselves.
Maybe you just pick up one of the pentatonics. Just bring in one of the pentatonics.
One pentatonic.
To do the acapella
riffs. Join to sing the guitar bits. Scuba ba da. What a super group that'll be. Andrew, thank you for this.
I'm just so glad. I feel like
You've truly punched it up.
I went to one of our producers, Alex, and I said, Alex, I want this band to sound like it's three 16-year-old virgins and Slash from Guns N' Roses sitting in. And I feel like Alex really captured that. Thank you, Alex. Alex Foote, great producer, great guitarist. And I just feel like I'm really pleased with getting it to just like the right amount of pure virgin energy, but also very clearly wanting to make love.
You are self-congratulating like a true virgin. Thank you, Andrew, for this punch.
Let's punch it.
Oh, man. So you got to have a closing segment on a podcast. Mm-hmm. You got to wind down a little bit. And today we're introducing a new segment. And it's called Walk-In Songs. What is your walk-in in music? Usually we'll have a guest. This episode, Evan and I wanted to do by ourselves to kind of, so you could get to know us a little bit. Usually we'll be asking the guest. But today we're going to be talking to each other about what our walk-in songs are. You know, there's the coolest party in the world. And right before you walk in, this song comes over the PA. And everybody knows, oh my God, is it Andrew coming to the party? For me, it's a party. For you, maybe...
could be any scene.
Maybe you're a Zamboni driver, and this is the song that comes on when the Zamboni hits the ice. Maybe you're a closing pitcher, you know? Clearly. Either for an actual baseball team or in, like, Major League 3, you know, whoever is the closing pitcher in Major League 3 would have a very cool, I think, walk-in song.
If you're a closing pitcher, obviously you choose... Cold as Ice by Foreigner, but if you're a Zamboni driver, you would choose
Hot Blooded
by Foreigner.
Yeah, there's a band that only does songs about temperatures.
Yes.
So
have you ever heard their song Kelvin? It shreds.
You're kidding, right?
Okay, that song does not exist. No, okay, you go first. What's your walk-in music?
My walk-in song. I think you have it queued up. I'm going to say the name of the song, and you're going to have no idea what I'm talking about, and then you're going to hear it, and you're going to think, oh my God, I know this song. I love this song. It's the best walk-in song ever, and they should stop doing this segment because everyone else is dumb. It's a song by a band called The Who, Baba O'Reilly. So I'll set the scene. The party's... oh, it comes on over the PA, and everyone knows during this little synth part, this is Andrew's walk-in song. Oh my oh my gosh! Is he really coming tonight? Maybe I send the DJ a trimmed-down version so there's just four measures of this instead of, you know, whatever this is. But, you know, the anticipation is building. Anticipation
I don't mind
building.
It. We're 20 seconds in. Haven't heard anything but this insane synth arpeggio that sounds like a cat is walking on a piano.
We'll cut it down. We'll cut it down for the DJ.
I love it. I'm at the party. The anticipation is building. I have no idea what's going on.
Well, maybe the DJ starts it really quietly. He's turning it up. He's turning it up.
People are beginning to get disoriented.
Now people are hearing it. People are only hearing it now. Oh, there it is. The doors fly open when the piano hits.
Oh, you burst in.
The smoke machine goes off.
You're backlit. We can't even see your face
clapping.
Yet. Your trench coat flapping in the breeze.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows even all the lyrics and drum stuff? Who even knows what's happening here? I guess I'm just walking around the party, glad handing. The Teenage Wasteland stuff lyrics, I don't really care about it. It's just the big piano hit. That's my walk-in song.
Wow.
That's it.
I'm just fading it out, but that's delicious. Great selection.
What's your walk-in song, Evan?
Okay, I just... apropos nothing, I thought of this one as something that just kind of like sums me up. Strolling in the house,
watching women turn to spring. It's because public parks just make you so horny?
Yeah, because I get horny in parks. No. Yeah, you know, I have finally starred in a summer blockbuster and I got invited to go on Colbert or something. They say my name. Please welcome Evan Gregory. And this old slapper comes on. People rush to their feet, standing ovation.
Are they singing the lyrics? Or this is like you're on the Tonight Show and the Roots are playing it and it's just like a clever nod. They're just like playing the melody along. They're singing it. They're singing it, right?
Yeah, they're probably singing it, just sort of sending the subtle message that everyone wants to make love to me, I guess.
I don't know if we should have played the 1974 version of Feel Like Making Love so close to our punch up of the 1975 version of Feel Like Making Love, frankly.
Yo, for real though, I have loved this song forever. I could listen to this song all day.
So that is our new segment, Walk-In Songs. Thank you so much for tuning to the podcast this week. Frankly, thanks so much for giving us a chance as the new host. Thanks to HeadGum for thinking we'd be a good fit. And if you can, you know,
do all those podcast things, you know, the things that you do to podcasts. You don't have to subscribe because you probably are already subscribed if this ep even showed up in your feed.
But write us a new review. Say, wow, these new hosts, as good. They're getting there.
Yeah.
Write us a review. Send us a tweet. Send us an email. A postcard. Kick us a ball. Catch us a frisbee. Just however you want to appreciate us. We would appreciate it so much.
Yeah, I don't even care what social media platform you're using, but the main thing I want to hear is ideas for songs.
I want plaudits. I want ideas for songs.
The plaudits.
And most importantly, I want a stranger to notice me and say, wow.
Let's punch it.
Punch up the jam. Punch it. Woo! All right. Give me two. Punch up the jam. Punch it up. Get the party going. Punch up the jam. Punch it up. Punch it. That was a HeadGum Original.